This sprawling courtyard at the center of the world's most famous five-sided building usually has the ambiance of a quiet public park. But it's buzzing today. DARPA has completely taken it over with demonstrations of 112 separate projects in what the agency says is the biggest event ever hosted at the Pentagon. Booths of computers and DARPA employees in light blue polo shirts line the courtyard perimeter, most of them showcasing projects focused on cybersecurity and big data, but also specialized apps for warfighters, and even a few focused on language. One of those is called BOLT, short for Broad Operational Language Translation.
Translating, is it easy to drive to the village?
It aims to give military members the ability to have a conversation with someone who speaks another language without a human translator. And yes, computer-based translation services have been around for quite a while, but they have their limitations. The phrases the computers spit out don't necessarily take into account the ambiguities of language or the minor grammatical mistakes that almost everyone makes, even in their own native language. Two employees from SRI International, who is building BOLT under a DARPA contract, show me the system is actually pretty good at letting an English speaker and an Arabic speaker carry out a face-to-face conversation. And when it gets stumped because there's no direct translation from one language to another, it's smart enough to ask for help.
What is the forecast for the next week?
I'm having trouble understanding.
Forecast.
Please say a different word or phrase for it.
Climate.
Translating, what is the climate for the next week?
The system can also pick up on some of the more detailed nuances of language, like the fact that one word might have multiple uses in one language, but doesn't work that way in another. In this example, it's the word tanks.
Can you provide us with water?
I can provide two tanks of water.
I heard you say.
Tanks.
Did you mean tanks as in containers for liquid, or tanks as in military vehicles? Please say one or two.
One.
Translating, I can provide two tanks of water.
Using technology to improve service members' capabilities on the physical battlefield made up part of Tuesday's DARPA session, but the overwhelming majority of the projects the agency demonstrated Wednesday had to do with solving vexing problems within the fabric of cyberspace itself. Questions like how to come up with a perfect solution to identity management. Even the two-factor authentication schemes DoD uses for virtually all of its systems don't guarantee that a person logging into a system is who they claim to be. DARPA's answer is something it calls active authentication, and its Pentagon presentation had 20 separate booths dedicated just to that topic. Here's the basic premise. The credentials people use to log into networks today can be stolen or bypassed one way or another. So what if we created systems that can tell whether a user is who they say they are based on things that are extremely hard to fake? Things like which data you're most likely to access in a given workday, or the way your hips usually move when you're walking around with your smartphone in your pocket. Richard Giardarisi is the program manager for the Active Authentication Program.
They range from how you compose sentences, how you write things along. Here they have it, how you use in file systems, which systems you access. For example, Allure focuses on the things you use, and then they start putting files on your desktop or on your smartphone that you'll never touch. And then when it opens up, that triggers off saying, hey, that's not supposed to be you. Here we're using visual fingerprints where they're trying to capture aspects of who you are based on what they can see. I have someone else who's doing things like capturing your fingerprint from how you swipe by catching little pieces of your finger as it goes and piecing it together to actually build a full fingerprint. I have two people focusing on different aspects of how the phone moves while you have it on your person. They're trying. Gate is a technology that's used in authentication for biometrics, been used forever, but this is, they can check out how the phone, even if it's in your pocket or if it moves, they can determine how you're walking and using that determined. So we've got 13 different tables here, all have different biometrics on them.
So it sounds like, and tell me if I'm saying this wrong, but it sounds like these are all, the common thread between all these things is they're sort of authentication tokens that can't be stolen. They're completely unique to you.
To view. But the other thing is, everything in technology can be fake because it's all, in the end, it's just a bunch of ones and zeros. So the reason why we have 13 is we want to have a bunch of those things. So you could fake out one or the other one, but you're not likely to be able to fake out 13 of them. You know, the more you add on, the more complicated it is to get fake out the attributes of who you are until you have to go into like the Mission Possible category to be able to say, can you actually breach this system? That's our intention, to say you can actually trust it so DoD can feel comfortable giving out smartphones because we know who's actually using it at the time. Is it the person it was assigned to, or did somebody else get to it?
As vital as it is to safeguard the information DoD moves around the globe via desktop computers and handheld devices, the department's also extremely concerned about the cybersecurity of the remotely operated systems that are growing in use throughout the military. Not just what the media calls drones, being what the Pentagon prefers to call remotely piloted aircraft, but ground systems too. The point is, for now, all of them are operated from thousands of miles away via radio signals. Because of that fact, it's pretty easy to imagine an adversary taking control of a piece of military hardware by hacking into its internal control systems. DARPA's High Assurance Cyber Military Systems Program is trying to make that close to impossible. Dr. Kathleen Fisher is the program's director.
We've made a lot of progress with the program so far, so we've just finished our first 18-month phase. This quadcopter that's here, at the beginning of the program, the red team was able to take complete control over the vehicle, which meant that they could disconnect the official operator's connection to the vehicle and then fly it off on their own purposes. Basically, they could do it was their vehicle for all intents and purposes at that point. This has almost entirely new code at the end of 18 months. The red team had full access to the source code and the vehicle for 18 months, and they were not able to remotely break into the system. So my colleague, who's an expert in penetration testing, his assessment is that that's the most secure UAV on the planet. So we have a long way to go, right? So this is a relatively small vehicle. There's a lot more code that needs to be made high assurance. And the goal of the program is to develop tools and techniques to make that a much easier process, to make it so you can produce code of that quality with lower levels of training. So you don't have to have a PhD in formal methods to be able to do this.
And creating technologies that make sure systems are secure by design long before they're deployed is one of the main goals of DARPA's Information Innovation Office, the group that organized the Pentagon demos. It turns out that human programmers are pretty bad at pulling that off. Even the brightest and most over-caffeinated coders in the world write programs that fall victim to human error. A couple of misplaced subroutines within a program that contains thousands of lines of code can create a huge security hole. So DARPA's creating a challenge program, something it likes to do when it identifies a problem that it doesn't quite know how to solve. In this case, it set aside a pool of $9 million in prize money to encourage people to build machines that can identify security vulnerabilities long before hackers have a chance to exploit them. Michael Walker is the program manager for DARPA's upcoming Cyber Grand Challenge.
So today's security products, you can think of them as massive checklists. They come with patches for vulnerabilities, signatures for malware, and all those checklists are built by knowledge workers that use analysis tools to look at software. We want to take those analysis tools, move them into high-performance computers, and make them fully automatic, no operator. There's good proof right now that this is possible. The very first precursor systems are happening. Microsoft Research built a high-performance computer that spent 200 machine years thinking about Windows 7 and trying to find vulnerabilities in it, and was able to find a third of the vulnerabilities ever discovered, critical security vulnerabilities, and remove them before it ever shipped to consumers. So we think that these systems, where we take the way we analyze software, the knowledge work, move it into the cloud and run it at scale, are ready to go out and actually defend networks on their own.
The challenge will work this way. Teams of what the agency says are the brightest minds in security automation will try to design computing systems whose sole mission is to seek out software vulnerabilities that could be exploited by hackers, in exactly the same way the world's top white hat human experts compete against each other in capture the flag exercises. Those computers will compete against each other to find the most security vulnerabilities in a computing environment DARPA has built from scratch. Walker takes for granted that the first round of technologies that come out of the competition still won't be nearly as good at searching for software vulnerabilities as humans are right now. But that's the point, to make the computers better.
And we want to build high-performance computers that play this game, the same competition that the experts play. And we hope someday that the systems that we build will go on to be able to play against the world's top experts and win. If you look at how the vehicle grand challenges happen, they started out in the middle of the desert, and the prototypes that rolled across the finish line at the first vehicle grand challenge were not ready for the streets of San Francisco. So grand challenges happen right at the beginning of a new technology when we're just trying to figure out how to make it work, build the first generation of prototypes, and identify which approaches work. What happens after that is the long road of research and development towards commercialization, productization, and refinement. And before we even talk about how that's going to happen, we have to prove that this idea is real.
The challenge starts 2 weeks from now. DARPA has not announced who it expects to participate, but it says more details are coming in the next few days. At the Pentagon, Jared Serbu, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.